I'll just say is that this is the first time we've adopted IFRS 16, so, and I'm not going to bore you with lots of detail on that, and of course if you have questions on that, I'm very happy to answer them. But just so you know, and obviously as with all companies, we've done our best to try and cut through that and make the numbers comparable and like for like. Revenue in the half year as a whole, 316 million, which is up 16%. Some of that is acquisition driven because even though we haven't made a material acquisition in the last 12 months, we bought Celonis at the back end of the previous half year. Obviously that's now in fully in our current half year. There is like for like growth within that. So in the UK and Europe soft flooring division, we've had 4% growth. There've been no acquisitions in that division. Ceramics is the one where when we get into the visual numbers over the page, we'll see it's obviously moved the most because of the acquisition of Celonis, but there is also around about 4% like-for-like growth within that division. Australia has unfortunately continued to struggle a bit in difficult market conditions and is down on a like-for-like basis 5.4%. We can come on to that in a bit more detail in a minute. EBITDA margin is 18.5%, which on the face of it, you'll say, wow, that's brilliant. Yes, it is very good, but it's not quite as good as 18.5% versus last year's 16.6% because that has been impacted by IFRS 16. The like-for-like year-on-year increase is about 70 basis points. Again, there's a slide in a minute which sort of breaks that down, which I'll get onto. As everyone will remember, we successfully refinanced our debt back in July, raised our inaugural bond of €330 million. Obviously, you know, we've sort of talked about that at the time and all the reasons we did that around, you know, the fixed interest cost that that comes with, the flexibility that the bond structure comes with, and you know, in terms of covenants and permissions and also the access to that deep sort of liquid capital market, which we now have. As a result of IFRS 16 and also as a result of some increase in interest costs from that refinancing and also following the acquisition slowly last year, PBT was down slightly. For the period, down 0.7, of which most was due to IFRS 16. Again, we've broken down in the results the components of that, how much it affected EBITDA, specifically how much it affected EBIT, how much it affected PBT. As an aside, and I won't bore you, in the earlier periods, it will always be a negative impact on PBT, IFRS 16, because we've moved from lease costs being charged effectively in a sort of straight line basis to now a straight line component, which is the depreciation, but an interest component, which is logarithmic and is always higher at the beginning and lower later on. So it will always be an adverse impact. That's just the maths of it. In terms, of course, it has no impact on the actual business and the underlying cash flows. That's exactly the same. It's purely how they're accounted for in terms of the leases. Cash flow has continued to be very positive. Again, I'll come on to some slides on that. We generated over 50 million of operating cash flow, which translated into about 24 million of free cash flow after all interest and tax and replacement capex. And net debt remains at 3.3 times. And again, there's a bridge later on just to show you what we have spent the money on and why that number is flat on the year end. There was some adverse, as you can see there, some adverse translational differences which affected me quite a lot between the end of March and the end of September. Just flipping over onto page two, I've been through some of this already. I've given you the sort of like-for-likes on the revenue. In terms of margin, and actually probably best thing to do is flip over to page three, because that shows the sort of like-for-like margin comparison. So you can see there at the top of page three, there is a bridge which shows how you get from 18.5% of reported EBITDA margin to what we're saying is a comparable like-for-like EBITDA margin comparable to last year of 17.3. A big part of that is IFRS 16. We also made a small acquisition this year, which is a lower margin business and had a very minimal effect in the year, but it does impact the margin. So to be completely comparable, you have to adjust for that as well. That was Ibero back in August. So the comparable margin is 17.3 compared to last year's 16.6, and that's the 70 basis points that I mentioned earlier. You can see the breakdown then in the table there by segment. And the story that tells is, if I start on the left, UK and Europe soft flooring, very positive. As you know, we've been through a lot of sort of reorganization and synergy projects last year, some significant costs that went to that. We've seen, you know, we are now reaping the benefits of that in terms of margin. and importantly, sorry, it's an aside, but it's a linked point, you'll see in the results that our restructuring costs have gone from 13 million last year to 1.8 million in the half year, and that 1.8 million really was the back end of the 13 million that we spent last year. It came over into April and May, so that really is done now. In UK and Europe ceramic tiles, that's gone down from 32 to 28, but, and it says in the point below, not to forget that we are consolidating Saloni, which before we bought it was a less than 15% EBITDA business, margin business. Obviously, we have then integrated that and sought to make improvements and drive synergies. So underlying that drop, there is margin improvement. It's around about 2 percentage points of improvement that has come from those synergies. But overall, obviously, on the face of it, it looks like it's gone down, but that's just mix and for bringing in Saloni. Australia has remained relatively flat, which actually we're very happy with in what is a challenging market. And actually, the natural reductions that you might expect to see when revenue is under pressure, we've offset with improvements in Australia and some projects there. So very positive margin performance. In terms of cash generation over the page, this really takes you down from operating profit and EBITDA down to free cash flow. It continues to be very strong. We're generating operating profit of, over 100% of, or sorry, operating cash flow of well over 100% of our operating profit and about 90% of our EBITDA. And after interest tax, replacement capex, and then you'll see there is an IFRS 16 adjustment there, which there has to be, we're generating a free cash flow of still over 60% of our operating profit. So very good cash conversion. We did see a working capital outflow of 6.8 million. You'll see there in the period. Last year, actually, of 1.4, you'll see the comparison, was actually in itself a bit of an anomaly. We normally see higher outflows at this time of year because, in particular, in the soft flooring business, there is a build-up in working capital because soft flooring is a bit more seasonal and has a peak season, which is basically right now. So you build up your working capital up to September. And that is exactly what has happened. We also had some additional stock, again, due to Brexit planning on the raw material side. And again, obviously, this is particular in the soft flooring business, which is the predominant business in the UK for us. That was offset by some reduction in stock in Saloni, where we have been reducing the stock there because we bought a business that had far more stock than we would normally manage a business with, and we've been generating some cash there. So there's some offsetting items there, but that's quite a normal figure for this time of year. And, of course, we'd expect that to reverse again by the year end in terms of the working capital, as you saw last year. In terms of CapEx, I'll just touch on briefly. There's a 12.3 million figure here, which is the replacement CapEx. There was another 5 million on top of that, which is the remainder of the project-based CapEx that we spent this year. Philip will talk more about this in a bit, but we are really done on expansion CapEx. We have lots of excess capacity now, both in soft flooring and ceramics. So it's 17 in total in the first half year, but that won't be repeated in the second half year. And in total, it will be around 30 million, which is basically a repeat of this replacement part in the second half of the year. Over the page, just to bridge net debt, because net debt has gone up. We started the period, i.e. last year end, at 340 million. We generated 24 million of free cash flow after interest and tax, which is the bottom number on the previous table. I just mentioned we spent a bit more on growth capex and a bit more on 1.8 million on exceptional reorg costs, which are the back end of what we saw last year. Those are completely done, and as you'll see, much lower than the figures we talked about last year, which were 20 million of growth capex and 13 million of reorg costs. So those are gone. The 20 million of acquisition-related expenditure was the acquisition of Vibero plus some deferred consideration payments, some earn-out payments, plus some M&A, some advisory costs in relation to Ibero and prospecting a few other things. That added up to 20 million. The next two bars both relate to the refinancing. It was expensive, but we also did it in a way that gave us certainty, which was important at the time. So there was an underwriting process, obviously various fees, whether they're bank fees, legal fees, accountancy fees, and so on. So those are the next two bars. And, of course, those costs, they're not going to repeat themselves. Those facilities are now there for 5 years, and that is done. And there was, as I mentioned earlier, a $6 million adverse impact on net debt from FX, just translational from FX in the period. So yes, net debt has gone up, but hopefully this clarifies exactly why that is. We've generated cash, and then we've spent some cash on acquisition and on refinancing predominantly. That last bit at the end is the IFRS 16 capitalized operating lease liability, of which, of course, there is an offsetting asset on the balance sheet as well. Quickly over the page, just to summarize where we are on net debt, that just shows you the different components. Nothing really to say there. I think everyone understands what it looks like now. We've got our new bonds, we've got a smaller term loan, and we still have some other smaller bits and pieces around the subordinated BGF debt and finance leases, which are much smaller. And of course, now we will be reporting the capitalized right-of-use lease liability as well, which adds to that and the face of the balance sheet under IFRS 16. And finally, just to sort of, I guess, just to drive that home as well, over the page you can, we've shown a summarized balance sheet, but just to show you again how that, those right-of-use lease assets and liabilities have come in. So we've got $63.8 million of additional assets. We've got $62 million of additional liabilities. The reason they're not the same number is they are the same number at the beginning, which was on the 1st of April, but of course over time then they move around because of the discounts unwinding and depreciation and so on. And in a nutshell, that's it. Well done.
So I think what we'll do now is just throw it open to questions, because most of the people I can see sitting in the room have heard the story many times before, so there's little point in boring you with the repetition of it. So is there any questions? Yeah.
Right. I want to Philippe, talk about some of the movement in the UK. Maybe by having done particularly well,
Sure.
So just for the benefit of people on the phone, to be honest, so that the question was about just talking about commercially what's happening in the UK and the movements in the different parts of the UK business.
Yeah. The biggest investment we have done in the soft flooring is with regards to the logistics. So we've spent quite a bit of money, as you all can remember, last year. We spent about over several quarters, about $10 million, mainly to add a southern distribution center. And as a result of that, with the southern distribution center, which we are having in, we have seen that our business in this particular area is growing with about 20%. So the moment, and as we develop the service proposition into next day delivery, as we are moving on with that, we can see that the business is growing on us. Yes, we do a bit of less roll stock, and the market is probably down anywhere between 5 and 8%, but we are still in a declining market. We are still growing. And we are not only growing in the non-margin part, which is more the roll stock business, we are growing in the cut-length part of the business. So this is important, and as we move forward as well in the next half year, I think this will generate more benefit. So in comparison to last year, we're in a much better place service-wise, so this business will grow on us. That's on logistics. So further on, we will move also with the northern distribution warehouse, which we currently have to some extent, but we want to ameliorate that. So we become a very solid service provider in the future. Manufacturing-wise, if you talk about Abingdon, so as you know, we closed down the Victoria plant. Everything has been moved down south. Now it's a question of operational excellence. We've taken the low-hanging fruit. We run OPEX programs, we run lean programs. And we can see after we've closed the yarn extrusion, because it was cheaper for us to buy it than to make it, we can see that the margin is gradually coming back. So the addressable market for us, which is cut length, we are very focused on the cut length side of that. Also, because we are the perfect solution for any customer who wants to destock, who wants to save some of working capital, we have big stocks available in all of our warehouses. In order to provide with a next day delivery. So manufacturing-wise, production-wise, logistics, So we have all the solutions, and most of the money is invested. Don't forget that we have, with the money that we've invested last year, that we, if we grow 15 to 20% in the next couple of years, that we can still easily, without having to invest any growth capex, that we can easily take care of that growth with what we are having. So does that answer your question now? Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Charles.
Okay, so, yeah?
Yes, the question was to talk about the ceramic tile market, how we're performing against the market, and how we're delivering, and how we're doing with delivering synergies.
Yeah, so as you know, the second last acquisition, Saloni, we are fully integrating, this has been fully integrated. We did a smaller acquisition, Ibero, early August. The results of Ibero we will see in the next half year, but Saloni has been fully integrated for the moment. We have been working around the one plant, one size concept to give, because this would give us production gains. We've been able to close four kilns, and a kiln is a dryer of an oven. So once we've done that, we've moved back from 15 kilns to 11 kilns with the same production output. So from a manufacturing base, we are in a much better place. The brands are still standing. We have Kerabin, we have Saloni, we have Ibero as separate brands, separate sales teams. But we are in a good place. Now, market-wise, if we look at what's happening in the market, we see that outside Europe, there is a bit of pressure. There where the brand is of a lesser importance, the Kerabins of this world and Saloni, it's not very well known outside Europe. The brand is of a lesser importance, so there is a bit of pressure there. But we can easily recuperate with a new segment, which is DIY. We were doing already a bit of DIY in Spain, but this is growing on us now since DIY is trading up in qualities. We are in a position to compensate any pressure we are having outside Europe, to compensate that in Europe. So, and if we look at the major markets in ceramics, which are Spain, Italy, Germany, and France, we are, and taking into account what we've done to improve the margin, we are in a good place. We think the market is going to be pretty flat in ceramics, so flat in margin, which is already at a very high level. And of course, don't forget the improvements of Saloni still have to be added on top of the current numbers. So, and this is with regards to Spain and ceramics. If we talk about Italian ceramics, when we speak about Italian ceramics, it's more the medium to low. It's more the lower end of the market. It's more DIY oriented, and there we are fully loaded. The factory is fully loaded. We have a lot of orders there. We're looking for ways to increase the capacity without having to invest ourselves. So we're looking, is there a possibility to do a bolt-on acquisition? We are for the moment commissioning some of the business to third-party manufacturing. So this business comes at a lesser margin, but at least we can prepare the growth which we are seeing in Italy. There's a good market for cheaper ceramics in Italy, and we want to capture that market. And we are looking from a strategy point of view to become more important in Italy. So we have a good platform in Spain, as you know. We want to create a good platform in Italy as well going forward. Okay, Charles.
Rob.
The question was to talk about the cash, the level of cash, and obviously debt on the balance sheet. There's something in the statement that alludes to this. We have 82 million of cash net of overdrafts at the half year. That is a big number. It's certainly more than we need to fund the working capital of the business. not to forget that we have a 60 million completely undrawn revolving facility as well, which gives us additional headroom. So, and that stems from, in part, the fact that when we did the bond issue, the refinancing back in July, including the bond issue, we did take some additional funding for, you know, potential bolt-on acquisitions. Now, we made one small potential bond, bolt-on acquisition, as everyone knows, in August, which was Ibero. At the moment, we have that cash. We're thinking about a few other, you know, options to invest that cash. And certainly, if those don't happen, then, you know, that cash will be used to pay down debt.
Is that the only problem at the moment? Yeah. Of course, is we're paying nearly a 3.75% on the debt, and we're getting nothing for the cash on deposit. But it makes sense to, if we think there's an acquisition that is imminent, it makes sense just to sit on the cash and then ultimately and then use it to make the acquisition. Okay. The question was just for the benefit of those on the phone. The question was just about Sarah's growth and the capex spend that we've made in Sarah last year. The when we bought Sarah, it was making about just under 10 million of EBITDA, and we paid effectively 50 million for that. We then spent 6 million on some plant, a new porcelain line there, and we expect EBITDA in that business to be around 12.5 this year, so it's gone up 25%. The extra 2.5 million of EBITDA is effectively the earnings that has resulted from the spend of the 6 million. There is very little capacity left in Sarah, which is why we mentioned in the chairman's statement that we're looking for some options to provide Sarah with additional capacity at very little cost. There, as Philip mentioned a few minutes ago, there is a lot of demand for Sarah's product, and if we're able to find a solution for this growth, you can expect to see Sarah grow dramatically over the next couple of years. It's a combination in terms of constraints. At the moment, it's primarily production capacity, but we also, in actual fact, have storage capacity. We're getting, we're sort of subsidizing the budget for Modena at the moment because the number of traffic tickets we're getting from our delivery trucks, because they're literally queued up out on the road to take the tiles away, we don't have enough parking space. So we're looking to solve that as well. I mean, there's literally thousands a month is going out in traffic tickets. Anyway, sorry, are there any other questions? All right, that was easy.
Any questions on the phone?
If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. We have a question from the line of Karen Sambatini from Millennium. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have two questions. The first question is, I'm just wondering where the 12.9 million of fees and commission and expenses for the bond issuance costs are located. I can't see that in note 4. And the second question is on the receivables. The receivables seem to be ticking up, and the days sales outstanding seems to be ticking up. So just wondering what exactly is happening there.
Okay. On the first question, you were saying that you couldn't see all the bond fees, the refinancing fees, I should say, in note 4. The fees, if going back, let's say, a whole year, because obviously we had a refinancing process that we pulled, as everyone knows, back in basically this time last year. There was that process. There was then a further process this year that culminated in the refinancing that we did with the bond and the new term loan. There were some sort of you know, back-end deferred fees associated with the previous process and finance. There were some underwriting costs relating to a facility that we ultimately didn't utilize to underpin the refinancing that we did do. So all of these things are the fees that and then, of course, there were the actual fees relating to the successful refinancing itself. These fees, depending on the nature of them, were treated in one of two different ways. For fees that directly relate to the new facility or obtaining the new facilities, we've prepaid those as is required under IFRS. So if you look in that bridge on slide 5, effectively this 8.8 million is prepaid in the balance sheet. So it sits as an asset in the balance sheet and is amortized over the life of the facilities, which is what you're required to do. And the 6.2, because that related to facilities that are now expired or under rights that were not ultimately utilized, we took them as effectively a non-underlying finance cost, an exceptional finance cost. So they're in two different places in the accounts. One is in the non-underlying finance costs column in the income statement, and the other is sitting on the balance sheet, with a small amount of it having been amortized in the period, which is, I think, the 1.2 that you can see, if I'm right, of amortization of prepaid fees in the income statement. So does that answer that one?
Yes, it does.
And your other question, I mean, receivables, receivables has partly gone up because we've bought a business, so that's one of the key reasons why receivables has gone up. If you look in the cash flow statement, in the main sort of cash flow statement, in the actual accounts, we have obviously it does show that there is a 10 million outflow due to receivables, but that is not the full movement, and the difference is obviously due to acquisition and also potentially due to FX as well. The 10 million that's not an unusual number for us. I mean, obviously these things ebb and flow, and in any given month to month, it can move by that sort of quantum. It generally does move, and again, sometimes the mix between inventory and receivables and payables differs, as you can see if you look at the prior year columns. But generally speaking, depending on the kind of exact point we are in the payment cycles or the receipt cycles, we generally see a working capital outflow at the half year, and this year it's largely come from receivables. But as I mentioned earlier, there was some offset. So, for example, in inventories, it shows an inflow, but actually there was some stock that was sold down in Saloni, but offset by some build-up of raw material stock, for example, in the UK in particular. So I think the answer on receivables is, like, 10 million is the number. That is cutting through FX and acquisitions, and that is not a particularly unusual number in terms of a seasonal swing for us.
But just to follow up, it's historically been positive in H1 18, H1 19. So I'm just wondering what exactly has driven such a large outflow.
As I said, these things ever, so that number is literally the difference between receipts in 1 month. It's a timing difference between 1 month and the next. So that's literally going to be a dynamic in previous years versus this year of when receipts came in, whether they came in the early part of the month or the late part of the month in any given. So that really isn't anything. That's not sort of some long-standing movement. That is just a timing difference in an intra-month timing difference.
Okay, thank you.
And when you look at the days receivable and payable, you just have to be careful as well that you pro forma that for acquisitions, because obviously when you look at any given point in time, you're looking at the full set of working capital, in this case receivables, on the balance sheet for an acquisition. But if you're looking at the historical sales or the historical cost of sales, you also have to remember that it doesn't necessarily have the full sales or cost of sales of that acquisition. So it will make the ratio look higher than it actually is in practice. And, of course, you have to VAT adjust it. Yes.
And the next
question.
So
we have another question in the room, just if that's okay. Yep. Sorry, go on.
So on working capital, do you have expectations for the full year?
Yep. Sure. The question was, what's our expectation then, therefore, for the full year for working capital? We always see the and as I said, last year was actually a bit of an anomaly at the half year, that it was actually very positive. We more traditionally in this business, in particular, this is around the soft flooring side of the business, we see an outflow at the half year, which then reverses at the full year. So we would expect that. We would expect that that swing that you're seeing to reverse. Now, that is subject to, for example, Brexit and any extra stock, raw material stocks that we're holding in the UK in relation to Brexit. But subject to that and what happens with that, you would expect it to flow, that cash to flow back in again. And be relative, yeah. I mean, it's always, there's plus or minuses of, you know, small single-digit millions, but yes, yeah, broadly flat.
The market declined, but our revenues were up 4%.
Yeah, we still see the market, and it is our real-time data impression of the market. Clearly, we don't have full market data in real time, but yes, our impression is that the market in the UK is still declining.
Did you say like revenue growth?
Well, we haven't made any acquisitions, so it's grown at 4%, and there's no acquisition to normalize in that number.
Just in the UK?
Yes, in the UK. Well, I worked through that. So the numbers I gave you earlier were 4% in the UK, around about 4% in ceramics, and UK and Europe soft flooring, 4% ceramics, and minus 5.5% Australia. If you can do the math on that versus the numbers, and you'll find it is a positive, it's a small positive number. In terms of the question here. Any more on the phone?
We have a question from the line of Stefan Ullman from ODDO. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. First of all, when you issued the bond, you communicated a leverage target of around 2x. Is this figure including IFRS 16 or excluding?
That's excluding.
Okay. Thank you. And then on the follow-up, you had a good improvement in EBITDA margins. Do you expect this to be sustainable for the full year and going forward?
Yeah, we expect further uplift. So yes, absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, that's all for me. Thank you very much for taking the questions.
No problem.
There are no further questions on the phones.
Anything else here in the room, or are we done? Okay,
great.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you to everyone on the phone.